Oh, hello. What is up? I didn't write the episode number in my notes, so I don't know what number episode this is.
47.
Thank you, Emily. I'm Jean-Luc. Alex said it was 69. He lied in the chat. Tried to deceive
me. Why would you go on the internet and tell lies?
I haven't been introduced. I can't talk.
No, you're here. Alex is here.
I'm here. Hello.
Once I say your name, you're introduced. Ooh. I think that's more or less how it works.
That's podcast law.
That's the creed.
Yeah. No one ever says my name. Jean-Luc. Well, not when I host. No one says my name. People say my name when I don't host. I guess.
Wait, who are you? You say hi. I'm your host, Jean-Luc. Name.
Yeah, I guess I do. I guess I normally do. I say my. Yeah, that's true. Hmm. If you can't tell, I'm a. I'm out of it. I've been like really brain foggy today. I'm gonna put my drink down instead of taking a drink in the middle of my sentence. It's not even alcohol. I'm just drinking a soda. But anyway, we're here to talk about the X-Men. There should be an X-Man that gets rid of brain fog and can always be focused and on top of shit at all times. And that should be me, because...
Yeah, his name is Adderall.
I was going to say, is that a regular person, Adderall? Yeah, that's...
John, have you been tested for ADHD?
Huh?
Have you ever been tested for ADHD?
No.
Do you want to do it live on the podcast?
You should try it out.
Do an internet test for ADHD?
No, I mean, like, for real, you should see if ADHD testing might be ready for you.
It takes 2 minutes. Question number one. Have you already received a diagnosis for ADHD?
No.
Okay.
Hey, Jean-Luc, you should look into getting tested for ADHD.
Alex is testing me right now.
Were you described as any of the following before 12? This was after 12, it doesn't count. Poor attention to detail, fidgeting, zoning in and out of conversations, difficulty organizing tasks, forgetting to finish tasks, losing important things, or no to all.
Fidgeting.
Okay.
In my personal opinion, I don't think that Jean-Luc is if at all, I don't think that he would be ADHD hyperactive. I think you would be ADHD inattentive.
I agree. How often do you have trouble wrapping up final details? Never, rarely, sometimes, often, or very often?
I guess rarely.
All right.
Sometimes. Maybe sometimes.
Oh, okay. We can go back. We're almost done. There's only 6 questions. When you have a task that requires organization, how often do you have difficulty getting things in order? Never, rarely, sometimes,
often, definitely,
or very often.
Oh, not very often.
Okay.
Like, I can organize my Legos really well, but other stuff not so much.
That doesn't count.
How often do you have problems remembering appointments?
It doesn't count if it's something that you're like really into, because that falls under like hyperfixation where you're like able to actually focus on it versus like normal shit.
How often do you have problems remembering appointments or obligations? Never, rarely, sometimes, often, or very often?
I don't know, somewhere between rarely and sometimes, I think. Probably, like, I would lean towards rarely, but, like, there are certain things.
Do you normally have to, like, you know, schedule, like, reminders for your appointments, or could you just remember?
Well, I don't schedule reminders, but sometimes I forget.
I feel like of the three of us, you...
But not, like, anything important.
You forget about the podcast the least, which makes...
That's true. That's probably true. Yeah.
When you have a task that requires a lot of thought, how often do you avoid or delay getting started? Never, rarely, sometimes, often, very often.
Is this just how often do I procrastinate?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I once wrote an entire paper in college between 3 a.m. and the due time at 7 a.m.
Very often. Okay.
So I would say very often.
All right.
I got an A on the paper, so...
They don't have a box for that. When you have to sit down for a long time, how often do you fidget or squirm with your hands?
Oh, always.
Or feet.
You guys have seen me on the... Well, I don't know. You probably don't see it too much, but yes, nice. A lot.
And lastly, how often do you feel overly active and compelled to do things? Never, rarely, sometimes, never. Often, very... Never, all right.
Well, not never, rarely.
Okay, based on your answers, Jean-Luc, this bit, you're unlikely to benefit from Frida's treatment model. We recommend researching other options by speaking with a local clinician or visiting their blog for more information. So you
I just need to get a I just need to get another fidget spinner. I was so sad when I lost my when I dropped my fidget spinner in a movie theater and I lost it.
Did you I just say
you might benefit from ADHD testing.
The test was negative.
That would require me to go to like a make an appointment and go to a doctor, and I don't want to do any of that. I don't want to have to be on the phone, so.
Yeah, I mean, you would have to like probably talk to your like regular like if you have a primary care provider.
I don't.
That's fucked up.
Well, I haven't lived anywhere for more than like a year in the last, I don't know, 5 years. And also it's impossible to find PCPs now because it's all like nurse practitioners and stuff.
Well, but you're a nurse practitioner can function as your PCP, but I take like regular daily medication that I have to get re-upped like every few months. So
I take regular daily medication.
That's
Ayo.
You don't have to go to a doctor for that one.
Is that I'm
you're
sorry.
Right, don't. You're
is
right,
that
don't.
Is that one called Gateway?
It's called Gateway. It says, take a trip through our gateway.
That's so funny.
Calling it Gateway is pretty good, actually.
Yeah, like,
I don't know how much is gonna of this is going to stay in the episode, but they're weed gummies.
No, this will stay in the episode. It's legal. That's fine. It's legal. I can get...
That was not a shaming. That was for the audience who can't see the video that you're showing.
Right, of course. Yeah, that makes sense. No, actually, not sponsored. But if they want to sponsor, they're great gummies. They're vegan.
What milligram are they?
They're 20 milligram gummies. There's 10 in this pack, and it was like, they're 10, but I take 2 all the time, so I just
make them in
20s. But yeah, they're 10 THC and 10 CBD. And they're very good. They don't have much of a bitter aftertaste, which is nice. And their activation time is actually pretty quick, which I appreciate.
Nice.
As somebody who doesn't like to take a gummy and then sit there for 45 minutes being like, when is this going to do something?
Never.
There's not a good segue there, but we can stop talking about my drug abuse and start talking about the new X-Men.
I wouldn't say that it's abuse. I would say that it's probably enthusiasm when it comes to gummies.
An enthusiast.
Like that.
Well, I'm enthusiastic about abusing drugs and alcohol. Let's put it that way.
Well, fair enough.
We are not here to talk about that. Well, I mean, we could. But we're here to talk about Grant Morrison's new X-Men. I guess it wasn't the last episode where we did part one of this because talked about Speed Racer.
We had to do a filler. It's fine.
Where, is this the filler in between the next Speed Racer episode?
Find out. Every episode is filler between
this
the
This is a
the
new
Speed Racer
podcast, actually. Crying in the Mach 5.
Do you think anyone ever cried in the Mach 5? Does that happen in the movie? Is there a scene in the movie where someone cries in the Mach 5?
There's moody people in the Mach 5, for sure.
There are emotions happening in the Mach 5, but I don't think crying, necessarily.
Sweating.
Yeah, sweating, for sure. There's fluids happening, but maybe
excretion of bodily fluids, sure. But
there's a sex scene. The same thing. Well, it's not a sex scene.
I haven't seen the movie in a long time, so maybe it is like a full-on sex scene.
Alex forgot, and I both recently watched the movie.
Yeah, I know. I feel
last
like...
night.
Oh my god.
It was on TV. I couldn't not... Like, I saw it last week, but because it's on TV, I gotta support... Like, someone somewhere is watching the numbers on that. Someone's like, watching Speed Racer.
I mean, yes, somebody out there is watching the numbers because they have to sign, like, the royalty checks, but...
See? Emil Hirsch is getting like eight cents, and the Wachowskis.
I doubt that Alex has a TV with a box that counts viewership.
I got like 50 Nielsen boxes hooked up to each other. It's like an Ouroboros, whatever, you know.
Hell yeah,
they're eating each other, and now that's why Speed Racer is getting its own TV show.
Alex is turning his bedroom into the end of Serial Experiments Lane.
Hell yeah.
Uh huh.
He knows. I'm sure Alex knows what that means.
You can send him a. You can send him a picture later.
Yeah, yeah. We can watch okay. Serial Experiments Lane together.
Well, maybe yes, our podcast image for the week. I'm sure it's good to share with folks and stuff.
There's
it's fine.
There's probably a Lane manga.
I would read a Lane manga, actually. But anyway, we're not here to talk about that. We're here to talk about X-Men. I feel like I've said we're here to talk about X-Men like a million times.
Yeah, multiple times.
This time, for real, we're here to talk about the X-Men. My beautiful boys and girls. We are finishing off Grant Morrison's New X-Men. We read the last four arcs of New X-Men. Technically, there is like a fifth arc of this book before it ends, but it's not written by Grant Morrison and it's not that interesting, so we're not reading that.
There's kissing
in this, you know, in Morrison's part too, so if all you care about is kissing there,
I do,
you know, there's some of that there. So the first arc that we read is Murder at the Mansion, which picks up immediately where we left off last time with Jean storming in on Emma and Scott making out and having, you know, sexy times in Emma's brain. She uses her Phoenix powers to invade Emma's mind and force her to relive, you know, some awful childhood memories, berates her for having an affair with Scott. Scott kind of fucks off because he's all in his feelings and sad. And at the end of it, Emma is sort of left alone, and Beast comes to cheer her up later and finds her crystal form shattered. So Emma is dead, and they have to solve her murder. So Charles summons Bishop and Sage, who are both mutants. Well, Sage is like a computer, but I think she's also a mutant, to come investigate the killing. They trace her last steps to one of Wolverine's cabins that he just has on the grounds
where he goes to
recuperate. Yeah, you got to have, you know, your spot. And it contains all these weird gooey eggs, which turn out to be the spawn of Angel, who
hated this.
I love this. The fact hated that Angel's mutation means she has fly DNA, so they had sex and then she gives birth to the eggs within like a week because her body doesn't function like a normal. That is some primo Morrison bullshit.
There is a part of me that is like delighted by how bizarre it is, but also like, ugh, it's so gross. Yeah. And like, we have to see these fucking weird infants like later.
She's also like, what? She's 14, 15 when she gives birth?
Yeah!
15 or 16, something like that, yeah.
Is there time skip since last time? Because when we met her, she was
14.
Not really,
Well, time has passed, but there hasn't been like
there's an extensive time skip.
Well, there is, but later.
I mean, not at this time.
Not at this stage.
No.
Yeah, so this kind of leads you to believe that Angel is guilty for killing Emma to hide the fact that, you know, she is now a mother. Mm-hmm. And technically that would be correct, but it's actually revealed that Angel killed Emma under the mind control of Esme, one of the Stepford sisters, the fourth Stepford sister. And she was aided and abetted by a 6'2" male, according to Bishop, which I don't really know how, I don't remember exactly how they got that, but it will all be revealed shortly.
Yeah.
The arc ends with Esme leaving the other three Stepford sisters on their own. And as you know, in classic superhero fashion, Emma wasn't even dead for a full issue because Beast picks up all her pieces, puts them back together, and then Jean uses the Phoenix Force to revive her.
I mean, there is a bit about him like meticulously putting together like all of her little pieces or whatever. But
yes, like a Lego set.
Yeah.
Just like a Lego set.
If they had the rights, I'm sure they would say Lego set. They said jigsaw puzzle, but it was like, kind of.
Yeah, the next story arc picks up right in the Hellfire Club, with, you know, Scott's really trying to get it up. I love, there's something that this arc does that I think is very funny, which is that Scott gets erectile dysfunction, and that also means that he can't use his powers. So that is awesome. It's
very
but
silly.
Anyway, Wolverine finds him. He tries to go shot for shot with Wolverine, which does not end well for Cyclops. And because he loses his wager, Wolverine takes Cyclops on a mission with him and Phantom X to uncover the truth about Wolverine's past, or the full truth about his past, I should say. So the trio head to a secret genetics lab called The World, which is operated by AIM, and discover a new iteration in the Weapon X program, Weapon 15. There's a brief battle with Weapon 15 and some of the other, the car cops, the brain car cops in the world. And they pursue Weapon 15 to a space station orbiting Earth, where they discover the sinister Super Sentinel program, which is a team of mutants that is being bred to kill the X-Men and all the other mutants and basically be controlled as a new super team. Wolverine starts reading the files on his history, and in the ensuing chaos, Eva, who is the Phantom X's ship / nervous system that's not part of his body, is captured and tortured. Phantom X and Cyclops are able to free her, although there's a fake out where you're led to believe she's dead.
Yeah.
But the arc ends with Wolverine having learned something about his history, and Weapon 15 walks up to him and asks him what the meaning of life is. And Wolverine turns to him and says, basically, there's no meaning to it, and blows up the space station.
Yeah.
Phantom X and Cyclops do escape. And this is where we pick up with the Planet X story arc, as they're sort of tumbling back down to Earth. Wolverine, of course, does survive the exploding space station, and Jean feels him in pain and heads up there to try and help him. Emma and Beast leave the X-Mansion on a mission, and so all the X-Men are kind of scattered into these little duos. And with Professor X alone at the mansion, we finally get the Zorn twist that was alluded to in the last issue, where he makes his move and, with the help of Esme and the special class, reveals himself as the sinister Master of Magnetism. It's Magneto.
Yeah.
It's Magneto, baby.
I don't love this.
He smokes Charles's shit, and then he uses the kick drug from a previous arc to enhance his powers, and makes a move against humanity and begins the process of turning New York City into New Genosha. But he did not account for the fact that the upstart millennial brats of the Xavier Institute, trying to undercut him, they don't believe in his methods. And so Beacon Angel turn against him. Magneto, you know, can't really control his powers because the kick drug makes him so strong. He accidentally kills Basilisk. Esme kind of thinks that they've got a Slade Wilson Terra thing going on, and Magneto's like, no. I will create concentration camps where I murder humans in gas chambers, but I draw the line at dating a 15-year-old. Then you know what? You got to have a line, and if you're going to draw a line somewhere, that's not a bad place to draw it. But it does result in him being left with no actual lieutenants except his boy Toad, the one who's there until the end. But unfortunately, Toad is nothing against the combined strength of the X-Men. Beast, Emma, Cyclops, Phantom X, and the survivors of the Academy all link up. And while this is going on, Wolverine and Jean are being catapulted into the sun. Wolverine thinks he's performing an act of mercy, kills Jean so that she doesn't have to die in the, you know, blazing heat of the sun, but in doing so triggers the Phoenix Force, and she reanimates and saves them, and they return to Earth. Magneto just gets rolled, and as his parting gift, has apparently absorbed so much magnetic energy that he triggers a stroke in Jean and kills her.
Jesus Christ.
So she's dead. And before we can, you know, really think about this or digest it, we are catapulted like 1,000 years into a dystopian future. It's not quite that long. It's probably like 200 or 300 years into a dystopian future, where humans are nearly extinct. This is the Here Comes Tomorrow arc. And the surviving X-Men are being tracked down by Beast, who is also working on reviving the Phoenix slash Jean, I guess. In a flashback at the end of the first issue of this arc, we see that Cyclops choosing to quit the X-Men after Jean's death leads to the eventual collapse of Xavier's Academy and the X-Men. Without their sort of, you know, the heart and soul in Cyclops, they just completely fall apart. Mm-hmm. And so we're left with this future where a team of Wolverine, Eva, Cassandra Nova, Tom Skylark, the Stepford sisters, and I think it's supposed to be Beak's grandson, who take on Beast.
That was the impression that I got.
That's the implication. They take on Beast, and in the final battle, Wolverine is able to convince the Phoenix that Beast had deceived her. And, you know, Jean remembers, oh yeah, Wolverine, that's my boy. We were homies. And she taps into the Phoenix energy, and she has like this moment where she sees all kinds of different universes. Some mm-hmm. bizarro universe, Quentin Quire, talks to her for like 2 panels.
Yeah.
And she decides that she should just change Scott's mind and he should live his life. He shouldn't let her death in the past mm-hmm. destroy her. And in doing so, they fix the timeline. The futuristic timeline collapses and Morrison's run on the new X-Men ends with Scott and Emma making out over Jean's grave and deciding that they're going to continue Charles's legacy and run the Institute. So yeah.
Wait, is that okay? You told me to finish reading at 156, but that's where 154 ends.
155 and 150. I apologize if I told. Those are the two non Morrison issues. I read those.
But yeah, because you said that, and I was like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Because
That's
where the volumes that I had borrowed from Comixology Unlimited had ended, but I went and tracked down the last two issues just to make sure that I had read everything.
Those are kind of those are like the capstone to the Morrison run slash the lead in setup to the Joss Whedon Astonishing X-Men run. So
I thought that the way that 154 capped off was like a decent,
it's a better ending.
It, I'm sure things will keep going, but it was a nice ending to the way things played out. So
yeah. I'm a sucker for Scott and Emma. When I started reading, Scott and Emma were together. So it's, you know, you kind of have a bias towards that.
Hmm.
But yeah, so that is the back half of the new X-Men. And so I guess now, having read the run in its entirety, what are your guys' general thoughts on it? Did you like it? Did you think it fell off at the end? Do you think it got better? Where are you guys at with the new X-Men?
I was kind of disappointed by the Zorn twist because I liked Zorn. I was like, I don't really, what, like Ernst or whatever, the like old lady kid child. I was disappointed that Zorn was gone because I liked Zorn as a character, and also like, I don't know, there's a part of me that finds it like weird and difficult to square like the characterization of Zorn with being like, oh, that was Magneto the whole time. Like, there just, I don't know, like there's parts of it that I'm like, I don't like that. I wish that Zorn had been real. But but it is a hell of a twist, and you know, like the way they, I, you know, it's not that I dislike the way things ultimately play out. I just, I liked Zorn. and I wish the Zorn had been real.
That's very fair. That's very fair.
Yeah.
Yeah, I liked I really liked the Murder at the Mansion arc, and I loved the two detectives going around being like, oh, interesting.
I did like that there was a little bit of like a murder mystery arc there. I thought that was kind of fun.
Yeah, it was lots of fun. And then, yeah, the Zorn twist, I feel like if I had read more X-Men books, and this wasn't really like not my first one, but this is like the one I guess I've read the most issues of, having Magneto come back and be the villain, I'd be like, whoa, that's so cool. But here I was like, oh, do you guys not have any other villains? And like, why? Like, come on. Like oh,
that's
and
funny.
And his whole thing is like, oh, I'm going to exterminate the humans again. And it's like, yeah, okay, that's cool, I guess. And get your mutants going. I like the first part we read more. I like the stuff at the school. I think it's like just a little more consistent throughout, and the Planet X stuff and the future thing I think was a little rough, and then kind of a little abrupt at the end where Beast is like, wait a minute, friend, hi. And then Jean does a thing. I do like the last issue where they do where Scott and Emma do end up together. I'm a sucker for that. That was nice. But overall, I'd say this was, I didn't like it as much, and I really only really liked the first arc in its entirety, so, or first volume here.
I remember when I first read this, and they did the twist, the Magneto twist, I was like, oh my god. I had the exact response that you're describing. I was like, oh my god, it's fucking Magneto. That's an amazing, because I had somehow, like, not, even though I, like, came to this late, I somehow had not ever seen that twist before. I mean, you know, I kind of knew something was going to happen to Zorn because he wasn't around when I was reading X-Men comics a few years after this, but I did not know that twist was coming, and it was super cool to me at the time. But yeah, I the last two arcs just do not work for me in the way that I remember them working for me when I read this like 7 or 8 years ago. There's I talked about a question about this, but Emily kind of alluded to it already. The characterization of Magneto has been in the past, and I think still is, pretty controversial. In the way that Morrison writes Magneto in this run.
It's more that just like it's difficult for me to square like the way that Zorn was written with the idea that was Magneto the whole time. Like, does that make sense?
It does. I think it's interesting because Magneto is in some ways an idealist, in that he believes that if he kills enough people, the world will be a perfect utopia. Or, you know, that's how he's portrayed at times. Sure. And the way that he can be empathetic towards other mutants does kind of make sense. And when you think of it as him, trying to basically...
It's not that I don't think that he can be kind. It's just like, I don't know, like something about like the way that Zorn was characterized just doesn't quite square with me as also Magneto characterization.
He got tricked.
Yeah. I mean, you can chalk some of that up to being undercover, but it is such insane whiplash, I think.
Yeah.
That it is. I totally understand where you're coming from there.
Yeah.
Is he normally, is Magneto normally like, let's round people up in camps and kill them? Like it happened to, you know, like, is he really like straight to thing? Or is it like, isn't this arc is a little more like he also has the drug that might be affecting his mind a bit? Is it like?
Sometimes in some portrayals, yes, Magneto is like he is here. But I think the implication here is that Kick is what's making him go like kind of lose sight and go so extreme in his goals.
Yeah.
I will say I find the whole bit where he decides to use Kick to be, I don't know exactly how I would describe it, but the whole conversation that he has about like, oh my God, people these days don't pay attention. Like I'm here, you know, showing I'm the master of magnetism and I've finally beaten Charles Xavier and all the humans don't care. They're not listening to me.
Yeah.
And he's like trying to talk to them from the roof of a building and I don't think it's really clear what's going on there, like how he's communicating with them.
No, I thought it was very weird.
And then he just goes into the bathroom with Esme, and Esme's like, oh my god, you should take this sick-ass drug.
Yeah.
And he's like, you know what, 15-year-old girl, you're right.
Like, it feels a little bit like a parody where it's like, I did this all, and everyone's like, it's obviously people are confused because you just, like, did, like, mass crime, and you're dead. Like, everyone saw you die or knows you're dead. It's like, and he's like, well, but I'll get my megaphone out, and then they'll know it was me, and it's like, which I don't inherently have a problem with, like, it being a little campy in that way or, like, a little silly in that way. It just feels like, tonally, it's a bit all over the place.
It also feels really rushed, right? Like, it feels like this could have used, a flashback issue or something from his perspective. Yeah. From, you know, because one of the biggest issues with this run, I think, rereading it now, is that there's never a reckoning with what Magneto's motivation is, which is the fact that Cassandra Nova unleashes Sentinels on New Genosha and kills 16 million mutants in the first issue.
Do you guys hear that they're gonna try to incorporate, like, Cassandra into the movie?
Yeah, I think an issue where, and I know these are kind of hit and miss, but, like, where you flashback and it's like Magneto as Zorn and kind of doing some inner monologue stuff, or like,
yeah, something like that might have been nice.
I just think if they did more with the Genosha stuff, his extremity would have been, I would have bought into it a little bit more.
Yeah.
Because there is something to be said for, like, oh, they just kill, because Genosha was Magneto's project, right?
Yeah.
Like, and to see that many of his compatriots just wiped out would obviously have an effect on somebody.
Yeah.
But they don't really bring it up very often, and no other character really seems to care that much about it.
Yeah.
No.
And there's like this through line where, like, they'll mention it every now and then. Like, Emma will bring it up in particular, but it doesn't really come up all that often.
Like, it's a mutant genocide. You think that every character would be talking about it, like,
right,
at least 50% of the time, where, like, it just happened too. Like, again, there's no crazy time skip until later on.
The very end, It almost makes me wonder if there was an editorial decision, because this was coming out around the time of 9/11, to be like, downplay the big terrorist. But then they destroy New York at the end. So, like, I don't know.
That's Morrison frustrated too. Like,
yeah, I don't know.
What, Morrison's frustrated? He's like, damn, Al-Qaeda didn't go far enough.
No, I mean,
that's exactly what Alex thinks that Morrison is.
He's frustrated with editorial earlier, and he's like, I'm finishing it now. I'm doing it this way. Right. I don't care what you guys say.
Yeah,
I'm leaving the book.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. It just, it doesn't come together in the way that I remember it coming together.
It doesn't necessarily feel as cohesive, unfortunately. Like, I wish that it did, because there are a lot of things that I like about this run of New X-Men. And ultimately, I would say that I enjoyed the whole experience, but... It doesn't quite come together in the way that I fully wish it had, I guess.
I still enjoy it on the whole. I would agree with that. But part of the problem is that the things that I like about it really get shuffled off the stage towards the end. Like,
yeah,
I mean, they kill off Quentin Quire in his arc, but then, like, the rest of the supporting cast, like Beak and Angel and the rest of, like, the special class characters, don't really get much to do other than just kind of be there around Magneto at the end.
Yeah,
and then they don't even really play much of a role in the flash forward arc, which you would think, if anything, that's where, like, the younger characters would be more prominently featured.
Yeah.
I mean, the Stepford sisters are there, I guess.
It's 150 years.
Probably barely. Like,
they could have, I mean, they can easily be like, oh, and they live long too. It's part of their mutant powers. Like, it's not.
Yeah. Yeah.
There. Yeah, I don't know. I just feel like Magneto is like, it just felt to me like a little bit of a crutch to make him the big villain. I don't know. And I guess this is like a seminal X-Men thing where like, if you're gonna have a villain, Magneto's kind of the one for it, but.
But also, yeah.
I don't know.
Well, I also think that at this time, Magneto hasn't been a villain like that for a while. At this point in X-Men continuity, because he had been more focused on Genosha, he was like somewhat reformed.
Is that like just him off on his own making this like mutant utopia and being like, hey, I'm not gonna bother you guys, don't bother me kind of thing?
Essentially, yeah. Like he said that's basically the thinking behind Genosha, is that it can exist separate from humanity and just sort of be left alone as long as they leave everybody else alone. So, you know, this is kind of the cycle that Magneto goes through, where as a character, where he will have these like long stretches of being reformed and not necessarily being like a hero, but, you know, being sort of maybe an anti-hero or more of a gray character. And so it's interesting that you say like, oh, it's kind of cliche to have Magneto just be the villain, because like at this time it was actually a big twist, because Magneto hadn't been a villain for a while in the continuity, which is why it was like this big thing, not only for Zorn to be revealed to be Magneto, but also for Magneto to then, you know, be like the arch villain of the entire series.
And I guess pop culture wise, the Singer X-Men movies hadn't come out yet.
No, the first one, by the time this run ends, the first one had come out, because is 2003.
Yeah.
I feel like the X-Men movies were popular, but like, I don't know, I guess, and this is probably colored just by my own experience, but in my cultural memory, I feel like the movies really hit at X2, like people liked the first X-Men movie, but like it felt like the reaction to X-Men movies really, really heightened around X2. So this would not have quite, this would have been like right before then.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, I wasn't like
I guess
culturally
you,
aware of X-Men or X2.
You weren't here especially, and you know, like other people who may have been older and more culturally aware can certainly fact check me on that. But
yeah,
like,
well, I mean, I can definitely see that being the case. I mean, X2 is always the one that gets cited as like, this is like the best.
Yeah, like in just the franchise. In my personal cultural memory, like it feels like X2 was really when the franchise like hit for people. So
yeah, I mean, I could see that playing a role, that like X-Men the first one comes out in 2000, so just before this run starts, and then X2 is about to come out or has just come out when the run ends.
Yeah,
so it definitely could be a thing of trying to push them together, like here's what, like, and that's why they bring back Magneto.
Yeah,
I don't know. It certainly could play a role. I wouldn't say for sure, but I don't know. It does just seem like kind of a strange. It feels very rushed to me. If anything, like you don't really get a lens into the character's thinking and really what's motivating him. So like, it's the kind of thing where if you really like sit there and think about it, you can extrapolate why Magneto is acting the way he's acting.
Sure.
But within the actual comics, it's not as it's a little muddy, I think. And it's fine for things like that to occasionally be left like up to the reader to determine, but when it's such a core element of the story, it feels like a bit of a bummer, especially because the last arc feels so insubstantial to the entire story. Like,
it does,
I get that the
it does feel like kind of like, I don't know. I have difficulty with the words to express, but like the last arc did feel like kind of a a letdown in terms of it being the last arc.
I mean, it's totally non-essential to the story that Morrison is telling, right? Like, if the most important part of it is Jean seeing the different universes of the Phoenix, and it almost feels like maybe that's something that Morrison would have might have wanted to dial in on more, but it just gets relegated to a couple pages at the end of the last issue.
Yeah, and as soon as they like go to the future, it's like, okay, in 3 issues we'll be back and things we and even probably bet, like, my thinking was, okay, it'll be like, because, you know, the place where we left is a pretty down moment. I was like, oh, they're gonna completely even retcon, like, the, you know, the explosions in New York and all that, and we'll go back to a previous time, which they didn't end up doing that, at least, like, that stuff actually played out. But it was just like, oh, let's go on this adventure, and now I just want to make sure that Scott and Emma are together before I end my run, so bye.
Bye.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a disappointment. And part of it is, I also just do not like Mark Silvestri's art at all.
It's rough.
Who draws the last 5 issues.
Yeah. Like,
the panel of the page of Emma, like, showing up behind Scott at Scott's grave has got to be, like, bottom 5 X-Men panels of all time. Yeah. I mean, probably not. There's probably some way worse stuff out there, but, like, her just showing up behind him in, like, the bra and panties with the coat over her.
It's not great.
Just, like, she looks like she's just been superimposed onto the scene. Like, she does not look like she's there.
She also never wears that outfit for the entire run, and then just shows up at the end because Mark Silvestri's drawing. And, like, it's his whole arc is that, though. Like, it's just like, ooh, is there a female character? Ooh, wow, ooh.
Yeah.
I mean, in general, like, okay, Mark Silvestri certainly, you know, does not help the portrayal of female characters. Getting the writer and an artist of Witchblade to draw women is never going to end well.
Yeah.
But, like, I don't think Morrison writes women very well here either, if I'm being honest.
I don't think anyone I don't think anyone in comics was writing women well in 2000.
Brian K. Vaughan.
I don't think anyone in comics was writing women well in, like, the years, like, 2000 to 2005 at minimum. Like, there was
you gotta read the first arc of Joss Whedon's Astonishing X-Men.
There's some
crazy shit in there.
The one that you read right after this?
It directly follows this, and I was like, man, I want to read some more X-Men. I'm kind of in the mood. Uh-huh. And so I was like, I'll just read whatever comes next. And so I read, like, the first 3 or 4 issues of Joss Whedon's Astonishing X-Men. Which,
yeah,
I wish
I'm not surprised to hear that there were slurs
are there?
Yeah. somebody calls there's this scene where, like, Kitty Pryde is counseling a student.
John, please don't say the word.
I'm not going to say it. I'm not going to say it. No, I know I'm not going to say the word. I'm completely sober.
Okay, fair.
So Kitty Pryde is counseling this teenager at the academy. Uh-huh. And Kitty Pryde's talking about, like, oh, we're a community of mutants, and, you know, we're all going to come together in this hard time and help each other. And the girl looks at her, and there's just this panel where she says, Mrs. Pryde, are you fucking R-slurred? And, of course, the F word is censored, but the slur is not. It's so awesome. Like, it's so 2003 comics. There's part of it that's endearing because, like, man, that's – well, I don't know if it's endearing exactly, but it's nostalgic in a way.
Yeah, like, I get the kind of nostalgia in a way, even if it's like...
It is nice that Joss Whedon, like, every Joss Whedon thing we've read is just like, oh, this is bad. Oh, this is bad.
Well, I kind of wish I hadn't read it because I read Astonishing X-Men actually before I read New X-Men for the first time, and I liked it a lot at the time. So now I'm like, oh, I had to confront the fact that it's actually shit. Fuck.
Are you going to finish it? That sucks. Keep reading?
No. I don't need to read any more of it. I think I'm going to read the Jason Aaron Wolverine and the X-Men. Because, you know, I'm still in the X-Men mood. I also might read the Bendis Uncanny because I remember really liking that. And that's like the, like, Gene and Scott book. So we'll see. So we kind of shit on Mark Silvestri a little bit, but there's a couple other artists on this book, and I'm curious If you guys, if there are any high points on there or anything that you liked or didn't like in particular, the first and third arcs are drawn by Phil Jimenez, and the second, and just the second, is drawn by Chris Boccolo. So it's consistent artists for each arc. And I'm curious how you guys felt about that, especially relative to the beginning, which is like, it's Frank Quitely and it's a bunch of fill-in artists. At least like this one at least has some consistency, even though it changes arc to arc. But
yeah, Phil Jimenez is definitely my tops of the artists are there. And when we went away from him, like, and then came back, I was like, oh, there he is. There he
yeah.
is. It's just it's pretty like house style-y, but it's gorgeous. Like he does well. His proportions are regular.
It's house style without being boring.
Yeah, that's a good way to.
Yeah.
To put it, yeah. He also did the only other thing I've ever read by him, I think, is Infinite Crisis, which I thought was, you know, again house style, but like very like it's really good for superhero action stuff. So.
Yeah, I like Jimenez. He's got like a. There's like a shading to his art that I really enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I would agree with that. I also think it's like it definitely is house style, but he does kind of have his own style as well.
Yeah.
Which is nice, but
it's not house style derogatory. I'll just say
that. Yeah. It's house style complimentary. That's a good way of putting it.
Like one of the only house style complimentary.
Yeah, like it fits so well with the superhero story they're telling. And I mean, maybe if he did the Planet X stuff, it would be a little more like, maybe I'd enjoy it more. It'd definitely be a bit more cohesive, I think. But yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's cool in theory that like if you do this like flash forward future arc, to bring in a new artist to draw that. Like, conceptually, I can get behind it.
I agree with that in concept, but, I mean, it does depend on the artist, and in this case...
Yeah, it's not great.
Yeah.
I also hate, like, all the lines. It's very... I mean, it's the 90s Image Comics style, but, like, all the, like, dark lines on faces all the time, I don't like that. Mm-hmm. I don't like how he draws Wolverine.
Yeah. I do kind of understand it, because a lot of that... 90s Image stuff was like, this is the future, look at this, whoa, so cool, guns and pockets and stuff. So I understand at the time being like, oh, who should we do for this future thing, let's get Mark Silvestri. But age well, it does not.
Wolverine does have an awesome costume though in the end, with the leather jacket and the cowboy hat. I do think that he looks pretty baller. I wish that I liked the actual drawings of it better, because the costume is
really cool. But I don't disagree.
Yeah. I don't know. I think like Jimenez and Boccolo are both great. They're both like kind of house styly, but you know, they both, I think, do good work. I think of this set of arcs, I do think I enjoyed the Assault on Weapon Plus One the most. I enjoyed that it was like kind of this smaller story, like side story, which was nice. It was kind of a nice break from all the sort of big narratives.
Mm-hmm.
I also like how Boccolo like draws Wolverine and Scott and Phantom X like getting up in each other's space a lot.
Yeah.
I thought that was like a really cool bit of, that's a cool bit of storytelling. But I also just, I don't know. I like Scott and Wolverine being bros. Like, I like when they're just like off doing their things and like pretending to hate each other, but you know, they've got each other's backs the whole time. Like, they're there for each other. They both know the score, right? Like, it's good stuff.
As I mentioned in the previous recording that we did, like this run of New X-Men focuses a lot on like the Emma Scott Jean love triangle, but like the X-Men love triangle of my heart in that instance is and always will be Scott Jean Logan. And so there were a lot of like good character interactions between like Wolverine and Jean, and then also like Wolverine and Scott, and I did, even though they weren't like the focal love triangle, I liked that these characters got to have like some good meaningful interactions with each other.
I agree. I also love the bit, and Wolverine, it's not actually an interaction between Wolverine and Scott, mm-hmm. but I love the part where Scott and Phantom X are separated from Wolverine in the world. Uh-huh. And Scott's like, you can't treat my boy like this. Like uh-huh, you're just using him like everyone else. He's deserve. Mm-hmm. He's a man. Yeah. He deserves respect. Mm-hmm. I love Cyclops, man. Like, Cyclops gets a lot of shit, but Cyclops will tell it to you like it is. He's a real one.
I like Cyclops depending on who is writing him. If it is just
fair.
Like, Cyclops is a character that I can find very frustrating when different people are writing him, but like when he's good, like he can be really good.
So the thing that made me, like, I guess laugh the most was at the beginning of the thing, Scott's all like, oh no, I wasn't like cheating on you, I was just doing it in my head, and I'm like,
no, bro, like,
what? You can't say that's not cheating, bro. like even if it's like bro. Oh, we were just talking, like, there's different types, but like, come on. Look, man,
even in like in a really real world scenario, even if like there was not psychic powers involved and I just found out that like my partner was having like really involved fantasies about someone else, especially their ex, I would be pretty upset about that.
It's like, okay, like, at the, I guess the closest thing is, like, it's, like, they're sexting. Like, at the very least, but it's more intense than that.
They are kind of like psychic sexting. Like, he wants to pretend that it's not some sort of transgression, but it is.
Yeah, he's all, like, moody and stuff. He's like, oh, why is she angry at me? It's like, what?
It's very clearly, like, not something that he should have been doing.
Scotty.
It's crazy that he's just, like, the way he rationalizes it to himself, he's just like, no, I was just like thinking about her while I was jacking off. Like, I wasn't, we didn't actually do anything.
Which I know that like Emma is like enabling him thinking of this in the way that he is. So like, you know, that doesn't help. But at the same time, it's like, bro, like, you are an adult man.
It's capable not about of Emma. Your own, yeah, exactly.
Like, rational thoughts. Like, you can and should say no to this. And you're not.
It is partially on Emma, but yes, it is definitely.
She has some culpability here, but at the end of the day, like, the person who is responsible for Scott being faithful in his relationship to Jean is Scott. Like, you know, you can put some blame on Emma for like intentionally getting between them, knowing that he is like married to someone else, but you know, at the end of the day, it is Scott who needs to be saying no, and he is not.
Yeah.
But even Emma doesn't want to, or even Jean doesn't want to blame Scott. Like, she runs Emma through the ringer in the first
which
issue.
Which is ridiculous.
Of that arc.
Yeah, which I didn't love. I thought that was kind of, It feels kind of like, I get that Emma is like the one that is tempting Scott away, but it feels kind of, I mean, you know, and I know that it is the early 2000s, but it does feel kind of misogynist for like Emma to take the brunt of the blame for that when like Scott could have said no. Said no.
I thought that this was like transitioning into like the Dark Phoenix saga, which I just know about in like, and I'm like, oh my gosh, if it's the stupid Scott being like, I wasn't cheating, I was just talking to her about sex and stuff, like, this is stupid X-Men or stupid comics are stupid, but it wasn't that, so
yeah.
You know what, we complimented Scott for a bit and then we had to you know, put him in his place, so
well, like, at the end of the day, like, maintaining the boundaries of Scott's relationship is his responsibility.
Agreed.
He fucked up.
Yeah. But
you know, Logan's there to make sure he knows he fucked up.
And at the end of the day, he gets to be with Emma. So.
And at the end of the day, he gets what he wanted anyway.
He gets no consequences, except I guess Jean dies, but.
I mean, he's pretty sad about Jean dying, but yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, but then he kisses her on Jean's grave? Oh my god. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm glad that people give him shit about that, though.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. They're absolutely right to give him shit about that. And one thing I do enjoy about the first few issues of Joss Whedon's run is that Wolverine beats the shit out of Scott in the first issue because nice. He's just like so pissed that he's, you know, in from Wolverine's perspective, you know, sullying Jean's legacy.
Uh-huh.
See, like, it felt a little weird that it wasn't Morrison because in the two epilogue issues or concluding issues, mm-hmm. like people are like, what? Like, I think it's Wolverine's like, you kissed her at the grave. Like, what the fuck, man?
Everybody's like, bro.
But because it's not Morrison saying it, I feel like it's almost like unofficial. And Morrison was like, this is cool.
It's almost like people got mad about it. And editorial was like, can somebody make people mad at Scott about this? And Morrison's just driving off into the sunset being like, yeah, I did that. I'm never writing for Marvel again after this. Fuck you guys.
Yeah, you could tell there was some editorial shit because they never went back, you know? Like,
yeah, they were all DC all the way after this. That is a banger. You know what? I do have to hand it to Mark Silvestri for this one thing, though. That last page looks great. Like, Scott in the trench coat and Emma in the fur coat and the fur hat making out on Jean's grave. Banger page.
Yeah.
Banger page.
Context is just so funny, but
Morrison's might just be a bit of a freak, and you know what? That's fine. I'm a bit of a freak. I think it's cool to make out on your dead wife's grave. Like, she wanted him to do it. She looked at all the universes and was like, no, I want him to be happy. Like, he should do his thing.
Yeah.
And she, you know, is like, she gives him the gift of making out with a bad bitch on her grave, you know? So it's
beautiful when you put it that way.
It's especially funny knowing where this goes in the future, which is that eventually, so Jean is the reason that Scott and Emma are together, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And 10 years from now in the comics, the original five X-Men as teenagers are brought into the main universe. So Angel, Iceman, Scott, Cyclops, Emma, or Cyclops, Jean, and Beast.
So there's two Scott something?
There's two of all of them, except Jean, because normal Jean is dead.
What happened to me? It's like, oh.
But she is horrified that old Cyclops and Emma are together. Like, the whole time, like, they, like, break up over it. The younger versions break up over this because Jean is just so, like, oh my god. Like,
I mean, it's there. Happening? You roll the tape and you see them kissing on your grave and you're like, oh, okay. Wow.
I don't think anyone tells them that that happens.
I think Logan might have. I think he might have been like, oh, by the way. Hey. What's up?
Oh.
Or that's like Magneto's like evil deed in that universe. check this video out. That's it.
Check this video out.
That sounds more. Right. Yeah. Anyway.
Do you guys have any closing thoughts on before we shut the book on Morrison's new X-Men?
No, I liked that. I don't know. I like getting to read some X-Men comics. As I mentioned in the last episode, big X-Men head over here, and getting to see like some characters that I was like familiar with in concept. Getting to see them like as part of the story was nice for me, and I just I like mutants as like a character type in the Marvel universe. So, I was just excited to read some of this and to read some more Morrison, just because I'm familiar with Morrison very much by reputation, and we've read a little bit of Morrison, but, just glad to add this to things that I have read.
There's a lot of Morrison discourse on the old TL right now. So
yeah, I hadn't actually apt. I actually hadn't seen any. So
what's the I guess we'll wrap this up and then I want to hear this Morrison
discourse. Okay.
Yeah, we can wrap up and then Jean-Luc, you can tell us what the discourse is.
But yeah, I'd say this is my least favorite thing as a whole that Morrison has written and I've read, which is not to say I didn't like it. It's like, I think it's still interesting and I did enjoy a lot of it. It also makes me want to read more X-Men books. And yeah, it was nice. I'm down for more X-Men, always down for more Morrison, but I'll try out that animated show when it comes out.
X-Men 97.
Yeah, the only thing I did about the note about the previous one was that one Wolverine meme where he's staring at the picture.
I watched, I think I mentioned this last time, I watched quite a bit of like reruns of the original X-Men cartoon, like on Disney XD or whatever.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Toon Disney or whatever.
Heck yeah.
But Alex, do you hear that sound?
Oh gosh, that sound just took Jean-Luc away.
It really did.
Oh, that's the doomsday clock, right?
It's the sound indicating our first ever cry space. It's a new segment that we're trying on the show where we mentioned something that made us cry this week. Alex, do you have a cry space for us?
Well, I do. It was I'm cat sitting in like a haunted-ish house, I think. It's a weird thing. That's not my story. That's probably a more exciting story. But I was, up late at night watching TV, and I'm flipping through Cartoon Network, and a show pops up, and it's like halfway through, and it's just like it's going at like so fast that I'm just like my brain doesn't even comprehend it, but I like it, and it's just like stupid jokes. So I watched Jellystone.
Jellystone's great.
Yeah, it was like. I was half paying attention to it to start because I was playing Marvel Snap on my phone, which is my new, addiction. But
yes.
I had to put the phone down to like, the jokes are so fast and so silly that like I had to focus on it for the whole thing, and it was
Yoki and Boo Boo are married for tax benefits.
I haven't seen that scene yet.
Oh, that's it. Yeah, that's a joke in season three.
That's great. It's great. Really good. So it's neat to watch that show. I'm gonna.
Yeah, I definitely recommend Jellystone. I've watched all of it, had a blast with it, and had such a blast with it that I've decided to go back and I'm watching through. I mentioned earlier that I started Veep, but also I've been watching Chowder, made by C.H. Greenblatt, who is the showrunner for Jellystone. So I've been going back and watching Chowder because I had such a fun time with Jellystone. I don't know if you've watched any of Chowder.
Just like as it's not full episode, like maybe an episode or two, but not.
Chowder's familiar, great.
But yeah.
Jean-Luc, do you have a cry space for us?
Do I have a cry space for you? Yeah, I do.
Oh.
And my cry space is that, unfortunately, people aren't going to see the movies that I have been enjoying the past few weeks. So and true. I hate that for me. I saw the other day that Lisa Frankenstein ended its run with like $9 million, which is just
I mean, in a lot of places horrible. In a lot of places, it left theaters after 2 weeks.
Well, yeah, because no one went to go see it.
So. Except me. When my wife and I went to see it, we were the only people in our theater. It was very... But we also went on, like, the last day that it was showing at our local theater. But so I imagine anyone else in town had already seen it. But also, like, it was good. Also,
Driveaway Dolls is sitting at like 4.9 million. So
criminal. People are not
seeing the movies that I am enjoying. Dune 2 is doing well. So that's cool. I like that. I like Dune 2.
I am seeing Dune 2. Great movie. Wow.
But I need people to go see stuff in theaters. And
I agree.
Because it is so annoying to me. And maybe this is just old man yells at cloud type stuff, but it's so annoying to me to see people do the whole like critical reappraisal of things like Jennifer's Body, like 10 years later and be like, oh my God, this is so cool. Why don't we get more movies like this? And then when they come out, they don't go to see them. Mm-hmm. So that's why we don't get more movies like that. It's because
this, people this
don't
movie go sounds them. Fantastic, by the way.
Lisa Frankenstein. Driveway Dolls, extremely good. I highly recommend both of these films.
Oh, it's an Ethan Coen movie. Cool.
Yes. Yeah. It's Ethan Coen and his lesbian wife. Driveway Dolls is very good. I don't love it as much as I think Emily does, but Driveway Dolls is a blast. Like,
I am literally the target audience for Driveway Dolls.
Absolutely,
like,
yeah.
You know, you like Driveway Dolls, but like I'm like who Driveway Dolls was made for, essentially. So I got like 20 minutes into the movie and I said, this is my movie of the year. And my opinion did not change the entire viewing experience. My cry space is that I mentioned to John Luke and Alex that my wife and I went to the zoo earlier today. But my cry space is that there was a carousel at the zoo and we got so caught up in doing everything else that I didn't get to go on the carousel.
No.
No.
I really wanted to go on the carousel. I wanted my picture to be taken riding on a carousel animal. But that did not happen. But we did have a good time at the zoo. I am crying because I did not go on the carousel.
I've been thinking about things to have at my wedding to make it more exciting. And I think a carousel would really do that.
You should, yeah, a carousel just would like, really.
We're a bouncy should, house.
Okay, unironically, a photo booth.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
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 Gwen and I took pictures at the photo booth at the zoo also and had a great time. But also anytime I've been to a wedding that had a photo booth, it's always been super great. And
or like one of those like Jurassic Park machines with the guns.
Oh my fucking god, like, yes.
Wait, what are the Jurassic Park machines with the guns?
That's like an arcade machine.
Oh, sure. Like the you should get the Jurassic Halo arcade machine. So that at Alex's wedding, I can just spend the whole time playing Halo.
You should get the Fruit Ninja arcade machine, actually.
I think we'll just have it at an arcade.
We'll just
deposit at the current place.
You're married in an arcade. That'll be great.
That would be
great. You should get the Rock Band arcade machine, but even better, you should just have like Rock Band.
I mean, I have the instruments and stuff, so.
See, okay, perfect.
We're halfway there.
I think he's all the way there if he has the instruments.
Might be Guitar Hero 3 Legends of Rock and then Guitar Hero 4 World Tour. So one of them only guitar, and the other ones you get them the vocals and the stuff.
I have Rock Bands 1 through 3 and every Guitar Hero released for the Wii. So I don't know what console you have yours on, but
so are you gonna travel here with your checked bags? It's gonna be like Guitar Hero. I like a drum set.
No, you have a drum set already. I won't bring the drum set, but I'll just bring the games.
I had it for Wii though. I don't think you had it for Wii.
I did have it for Wii.
Oh.
I had all my Guitar Hero and Rock Band games are on Wii, so.
This is gonna be good.
That's cheaper than buying a Dino Jurassic Park machine or renting it, so.
It's also cheaper than hiring a band.
Also, everyone loves Rock Band, so it's easy.
Holy shit, if the wedding was just people playing Rock Band songs for the music.
Dude, you should just let me sing like Twilight of the Thunder God in the worst possible, like,
please.
Death roar.
That'd be so good.
I'll ask Madeline if it could be our first dance. We'll see
what... Yeah, the first dance should just be the Rock Band Cannibal Corpse pack. Just, I'm sure there's some bangers in there.
Oh, yeah.
Oh. All right. Well, I think we can call it there since we have completed our cry spaces.
Yeah.
You can find us on Twitter at Crying Book Club. Alex is at Alex Hansiak. Emily is at M Pandanata, spelled like it sounds. I am at Mountain Dew Liker. You can follow me also on Letterboxd, where I am J L Botville. Emily. Is Pandabore on Letterboxd, right?
I am! And also on Twitch, but I haven't streamed on Twitch in over a year. Maybe when I get my office set up in Gwen and I's new apartment, when we move, I will hop back on Ace Attorney, because I do miss it!
Ace Attorney is goated. I miss Emily's Ace Attorney streams.
There's also a movement game coming out, and I could stream that and be good.
You should get really into Halo. In 2024 should be the year of Emily playing Halo on stream.
We'll see about that.
Your hair is already the right color, so.
Yeah.
Greenish.
Yeah.
Shouldn't it be really bright blue for the energy swords?
Well, no, but Master Chief's armor is green. And also Halo. Yeah. There's literally a Mountain Dew inspired map in Halo Infinite.
That's so really funny. I didn't know
Is it a Forge map?
No, it's one of the Halo 3. It's in the Halo 3 playlist. It's the I'm blanking on the name of it off the top of my head.
I love this.
Critical Dew Point is what it's called, I think.
Oh, the green one.
You know it. We've played on it, Alex. You'll know it when you see it.
Is it but... actually sponsored by Mountain Dew?
Yes, it is actually sponsored by Mountain Dew.
That's so funny.
There's like green liquid on the ground that is like, there's like pools of green liquid.
Holy fuck.
Incredible.
This is the kind of things that more companies need to do. Like, if you're going to promote, like.
Dude, Halo is awesome.
Wow.
Anyway, Emily has other podcasts called The Fresh Podcast Market, Imagine Me and Utena, and that looks terrible. Yeah. And a bunch of podcasts that you produce as well, but I don't know all those.
Big Steppy and Loser Like Me. Those are the ones that pay me to edit them.
There you go. I think that's all the plugs.
That's all our things, I think.
I gotta say, I'm way more like energetic and focused and clear now that we've talked for like an hour.
And now that you had your, now that you got your diagnosis, that is not a diagnosis. So.
That I'm not.
Now that you know
I'm not
what's
ADHD.
Going on. No, but you should see your doctor.